Hey everybody, some really bad news I want to sound the alarm about and bring to your attention. The CDC is meeting in 2 days, on October 19th and October 20th, and they're going to be talking here, a vaccines for children vote on COVID-19 vaccine is scheduled. So a lot of people are concerned, I don't know for sure, but people are concerned that they're looking to add the COVID-19 vaccines to the childhood schedule. So they're talking about the adult immunization schedule, the child slash adolescent immunization schedule, COVID-19 vaccines, and a whole host of other vaccines as well. They're voting on adding additional shots to the already over-the-top and ridiculous, frankly harmful, vaccination schedule. So it says recommendation votes on pneumococcal adult immunization schedule, child adolescent immunization schedule, and COVID vaccines. So a lot of people are concerned that they might, as early as this meeting, add the COVID-19 vaccines to the childhood vaccine schedule. So the timing here is extremely concerning. Remember, Peter Marks of the FDA says that the first vaccines are very poorly effective against the current circulating strains.
What we gave to people originally is very poorly effective against symptomatic disease from that BA.5 variant.
So a lot of people are concerned that possibly even as early as this meeting, these tyrants at the CDC might violate the Nuremberg Code for the umpteenth millionth time. There is study after study after study showing negative efficacy of these shots in the long run. So we have study after study after study showing that these vaccines lose their efficacy very quickly and oftentimes plummet well below zero. And they just announced the other day that they want to make these annual. And that's just the latest crazy announcement that they've made. It's been wave after wave after wave of moving the goalposts with crazy announcements. From, oh, it'll take 2 shots, to it's going to take a shot every year. And they're telling that to people who've already taken 5 shots. Oh, it's going to take a shot every year. Now, the existing childhood schedule is obscene. They are injecting so much aluminum, formaldehyde, and other terrible substances into children. This is a huge scandal in and of itself, what's already on the schedule. I'm working on a series of documentaries to expose how heinous this is. The Hep B shot given on the first day of birth, all these other shots you can see here, and they're not letting people choose. They've never proven that these shots are safe, especially in combination. In fact, a lot of evidence points to the contrary, that these are dangerous. Look at the vaccine excipient table from the CDC. Just take a second and read these ingredients. You'll see aluminum hydroxide all over the place, aluminum phosphate, sodium chloride, formaldehyde. People my age were injected with copious amounts of mercury in the form of thimerosal, which is still in the multi-dose flu shot vials that get injected into people. MRC5 cellular proteins, polysorbate, neomycin. A lot of these I can't even read. Amorphous aluminum, hydroxy, phosphate, sulfate, formaldehyde again. The amount of aluminum, which is a known neurotoxin, is disgusting to me. These people have the worst track record. Look at how much mercury they've injected into people. Look at how much mercury. It's just disgusting. Polysorbate 80, thimerosal, calf bovine serum, egg protein, and they don't let people opt out. And speaking of the timing on all this, these bastards, as many times as they could, systematically removed people's right to say no. Or they attempted to. You can't actually take away people's right to not be injected with crap against their will. You can only deprive people illegally and criminally by coercing injections they don't want. But it just keeps going on and on. So here's the PDF that they link to on this announcement page. So this is under the Department of Health and Human Services, the HHS. The CDC is calling an Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, an ACIP meeting. We covered the last ACIP meeting. It was a disgrace. Pathetic disgrace.
It is important, however, to acknowledge what we don't know. Right now, we don't know the rates of myocarditis after bivalent COVID-19 vaccines. It's unlikely that the inclusion of Omicron would increase myocarditis rates. What we know that does impact myocarditis is age and sex of the individual. Intervals since previous dose and potentially total dose may be related, but it's unlikely that the inclusion of Omicron would have an impact. We don't know the incremental increase in vaccine effectiveness. Antibody titers to currently circulating variants were higher after a bivalent booster dose than with the current monovalent booster. However, most of the data to inform recommendations were from that BA1 bivalent vaccine. The incremental benefit from going from BA1 to BA4.5 are unknown. We also don't know the duration of protection for these vaccines. However, antibody titers after bivalent vaccine and prior infection were robust. This combination of prior infection and the bivalent vaccine may prolong the duration of protection, which could actually decrease a need for frequent boosters.
We're going to stick with 2 months, although I agree with you and I feel pretty strongly that it really should be longer to get maximum benefit and reduce risk. But we're going to leave that to clinical considerations. Was that your idea? And here we stick with it at least 2 months. I think it's the wrong message, but it would be one of the brackets of timing.
Do you want me to say anything about the interval or?
Yes, please. I would appreciate that.
Okay. We absolutely, the work group talked about this as well. I think there are distinct reasons that it is really helpful for the ACIP recommendations in the current setting that we're in, for the recommendations to match the EUA. If ACIP were to vote on a different recommendation, then that would be different than the authorized interval, and it would cause significant confusion and potentially legal issues with the provider agreements that there would be different intervals recommended by FDA and ACIP. So that's why we've really tried to emphasize that we have in clinical considerations some considerations for longer interval, especially around those who have had prior infection, and that for kind of the population that is at risk for myocarditis, the nearly every one of those individuals is 6 months, if not longer, from their last dose. I will say that this is not meant to imply that people need boosters every 2 months moving forward. As we said, this is a transition point for the program where we're moving hopefully forward, where we're not kind of counting doses with minimum intervals, but may be able to get on kind of a more regular schedule. Fully agree with Dr. Bell that we have to follow the data and that could change, but that's the plan. And so hopefully the future interval is considerably longer, but this is, if we're recommending a time-based program that we think everyone should, who's eligible, should go get this vaccine this fall, the minimum interval is 2 months since your last dose, but most people are longer than that. And it legally is really needs to be in line with FDA. Thanks.
Dr. Oliver, would there be any objection to taking out the words at least 2 months after? It could just be just 12 and older after receipt of a primary series with additional clarification in the wording.
I think it's the interval that matches the EUA, I think, is important here.
I don't quite understand that, but I understand that we would say that at least 2 months has to pass, but it would allow us more flexibility to actually provide that information that's needed for both clinicians and patients to understand, you know, if they just had an infection, that, you know, perhaps more leeway or something along those lines. There's a lot of people who have had recent infection, and I read this as they should be getting it 2 months, even though it says at least 2 months. So this is a legal issue. We cannot change the wording of the recommendation.
It is a PREP Act liability if the ACIP recommendations are different than the EUA recommendations around specific things like time intervals.
Could I just push this just a little bit more and ask if we're not making a different recommendation, if we simply are silent on the issue of the interval in the recommendation, it's not exactly the same as contradicting the EUA language of the FDA. Again, we maybe are not at, this may not be a very fruitful avenue, but I do wonder if the lawyers might look a little bit differently on this specific issue, which is not contradicting the FDA. It's just being silent on the issue in the language of the recommendation. Mm-hmm.
This is Melinda Wharton. I appreciate the concerns about this issue. I will remind you all that there are very few people who are within 2 months of getting a recent dose. We're just not talking about many people who are in the age groups that that are eligible for this. And realistically, as this goes forward and moves toward publication program implementation, it will have to be in alignment with the EUA. I certainly appreciate the concerns, though, that you all have articulated. I think you absolutely have expressed concerns about those groups of people for whom this may be a more important consideration. And we do have in the clinical considerations guidance about people with recent infection. And I am sure the conversation today has increased the visibility and awareness of those issues, and hopefully people can make decisions about timing of vaccination accordingly. So I don't think we can take it out of the vote, but it's not a requirement for a strict 2 month interval. It's at least 2 months. And again, there's very few people who are within 2 months of getting vaccinated anyway.
Dr. Brooks?
Yeah, to move it along, two things. It will be in the clinical considerations, whatever we want to be in the clinical considerations. And number two, the words at least, that covers us comfortably. If you want to do it 6 months or 12 months, we're saying at least 2 months. And I believe it's somewhat aligning with the whatever the clinical data that we have, be it from humans or mice. So I'm comfortable with at least 2 months, underscoring at least.
Dr. Paley?
I wanted to make a motion to accept the vote language. Thank you.
Sure. And no clinical trial data for bivalent boosters with BA.4/5 yet.
So just no data in humans yet for 12 to 17. Thank you.
Study is ongoing, correct?
I just would like to remind the committee that every year we use influenza vaccines that are based on new strains without clinical studies being done. This is what we do every year.
I do recognize that these are animal studies for the B.4/5 variant, but I also agree that this is the future that we're heading for, which is we're going to have more variants, and we should be treating this like the flu, where the variants, if we have evidence that the pattern seems to flow smoothly and that we can use new strain variants every year, I think that's the way we're going to be going over the next several years. So after thinking about it, I am comfortable, even though we don't have human data and just animal data, of supporting the B.4/5 variant booster.
I just would like to remind the committee that every year we use influenza vaccines that are based on new strains without clinical studies being done. This is what we do every year. We have well-established platforms. There are changes made in the particular strains that are included, but overall the vaccines are incredibly similar year to year. And in a lot of ways, this is really analogous to that, and we've had hundreds of millions of doses of these vaccines used. We've got a lot of familiarity with the vaccines and their performance, and what's happening is a change in the particular virus that the vaccine is targeting that is not a huge one. And so I think the extrapolations that are being made as well as the preclinical and clinical data that is contributing to this discussion, really do provide a lot of information upon which the Food and Drug Administration based the authorization.
We would have not much expectation that this vaccine would be clinically inferior to what we're already giving. And because it has the potential, I think, to decrease hospitalizations and even deaths. So I think I will reluctantly come down on that side and know that we don't usually have much information, too much clinical information for sure for efficacy when we are thinking about change in influenza vaccines, when it is the same scaffolding, part of the same roof, we're just putting in, you know, some dormers and windows. That's one thing.
Number one, you know, I want to echo what Dr. Wharton mentioned, and actually I think Dr. Lehr mentioned at the very beginning, which is this approach is very similar to what we've done for flu. So I don't think this is an entirely fundamentally new approach that we're looking at, but I do feel, you know, the same level of, I would like to have more information. And it would be better to have more information. But we, again, have this decision in front of us where we anticipate there will be a tough winter season ahead, both with flu and with COVID-19. And I feel our job is to do our best to protect public health. So given that, and given the, you know, the potential for earlier administration during this season, to protect a greater proportion of the population. So I am anticipating effectiveness, and my concern is about missing opportunities for protecting many people. I do think that this makes sense going forward.
This combination of prior infection and the bivalent vaccine may prolong the duration of protection, which could actually decrease a need for frequent boosters.
So since some people may have already had 3, 4, or even 5 doses for those who are immunocompromised and had a second booster already, we want to emphasize we're no longer looking at total number of doses. If eligible, meaning age 12 and older, have completed at least a primary series, and are 2 months out from the last dose, a bivalent booster should not be denied based on the number of total doses the person has received.
That while I wholeheartedly embrace this idea of being more routine and, you know, this will now we're going to have, you know, just maybe one booster and that sort of path forward, as Dr. Wharton outlined at the very beginning of this meeting, I think it is important for people to understand that while we will, you know, we hope that we can go in that direction and we're all, you know, ready to change the way we're dealing with this pandemic. I think it's important to recognize and to say that things might change. We don't know what the future is going to hold. And while we would like to be more routine, it may be that we, you know, have to continue in this vein, depending on what happens with the virus and with the pandemic. I just don't want people to totally get their hopes up when I think we all recognize that we might not get there as quickly as we would like.
Thank you, Dr. Bell. I'm going to remain optimistic. I'm just going to say, Dr. Sanchez.
We've done immunobridging, and that has been done with, you know, vaccines for, you know, decades. But I really do struggle with a vaccine that has no clinical data that's reported for humans, for, you know, those that would be actually receiving the vaccine. Overall, I have an issue with that.
Number one, you know, I want to echo what Dr. Wharton mentioned, and actually I think Dr. Lehr mentioned at the very beginning, which is this approach is very similar to what we've done for flu. So I don't think this is an entirely fundamentally new approach that we're looking at, but I do feel, you know, the same level of, I would like to have more information. And it would be better to have more information. But we, again, have this decision in front of us where we anticipate there will be a tough winter season ahead, both with flu and with COVID-19. And I feel our job is to do our best to protect public health. So given that, and I given the you know, the potential for earlier administration during this season to protect a greater proportion of the population. So I am anticipating effectiveness, and my concern is about missing opportunities for protecting many people. I do think that this makes sense going forward.
We want to emphasize we're no longer looking at total number of doses. If eligible, meaning age 12 and older, have completed at least a primary series, and are 2 months out from the last dose, a bivalent booster should not be denied based on the number of total doses the person has received.
These people are culpable. I think these people are knowingly negligent in their duties for money. So the meeting will be held October the 19th from 8:30 to 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and October 20th from 8:30 a.m. to 3:20 p.m. So I'll keep an eye on this and I'll try to record that. And these are always really hard to cover because I have to watch them like three different times, edit down the clips. So I really need your help to fund this effort. Check out groupdiscover.com if you want to support this mission. Purpose: the committee is charged with advising the director, CDC, on the use of immunizing agents. It says the committee is mandated to establish and periodically review, as appropriate, revise the list of vaccines for administration to vaccine-eligible children through the Vaccines for Children program, along with schedules regarding dosage, interval, dosage, and contraindications. And there's a big reason why they want to get this onto the childhood schedule. It gives them even more legal protection to do their blood profiteering.
Well, they have to give it to kids because here's why. They cannot market this vaccine without having immunity shield. Oh, I mean, I sue pharmaceutical companies for a living. And I have enough criminal activity that I know about Pfizer at this point and Moderna, that if they went ahead and marketed a vaccine where they end up killing people or injuring them, and I can sue them, well, they'd be through. So they're never going to market a vaccine, allow people access to a vaccine, an approved vaccine, without getting liability protection. Now, the emergency use authorization vaccines have liability protection under the PREP Act and the CARES Act. So as long as you take an emergency use, you can't sue them. Once they get approved, now you can sue them, unless they can get it recommended for children.
What?
Because all vaccines that are recommended, officially recommended for children, get liability protection, even if an adult gets that vaccine. That's why they're going after kids. They know this is going to kill and injure a huge number of children, but they need to do it for the liability protection. And here's how they know that it's going to injure kids. During the Pfizer study, they only tested it on 1,300 children. And one of those we now know was a girl called Maddie Gary. We only know about this because she and her family came forward and told us what happened. Maddie Gary got the vaccine. She immediately went into seizures. She is now in a wheelchair for life, and she needs a feeding tube to eat. So because Pfizer only tested on 1,300 kids, it is stuck with the extrapolation, and one out of every 1,300 kids is going to be injured like that, an injury worse than death. Pfizer did not report her injury. Instead, it said she had a stomach ache. So that's what they reported to the FDA. They lied.
Matters to be considered. The agenda will include discussions on influenza vaccines, pneumococcal vaccines, meningococcal vaccines, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine, rotavirus vaccine, dengue vaccine, and they also say the adult immunization schedule and the child immunization schedule. They also mention COVID-19 vaccines, and they also mention this other vaccine called chikungunya. So it says recommendation votes on pneumococcal vaccine, adult immunization schedule, child/adolescent immunization schedule, and COVID-19 vaccines are scheduled. So they're looking to make recommendations. Now, they don't say explicitly, but it's quite possible that they're going to vote on putting COVID-19 vaccines onto the childhood schedule and onto the adult schedule. We're going to keep an eye on this. This is crazy. So I wanted to bring this to everybody's attention so we can keep an eye on this. I have every intent, if I can, to record this meeting and publish any crazy sound bites, and I could use your support. Check out groupdiscover.com and sign up today. Thank you so much. This is completely outrageous. I saw this news. I'm working on some documentaries about the childhood vaccine schedule and how much harm they're doing with these vaccines. It is astronomical. These people ought to hang their heads in shame. This cannot stand. We have to fight for the children and for the parents. This is so unbelievably sickening.